World famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome, 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 welcome here. Truth is our bitch. We're here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. I want to ask Bud Dickman right off the bat. No, I'm asking him, why didn't you call me, Bud?
I texted you.
He did send a text.
Yeah, but I said to call.
Well, what's the difference, Phil?
The difference is one is ringing and the other one you got to look for it.
Yeah, well, I did the best I could.
Did the best you could? What I was doing, folks, was making a coffee, and this guy, I said, give me a call, and he texts me.
That is the same, well...
No, it's not the same thing. One rings, and the other one you see.
Yeah, but if you're paying attention to the phone...
Aren't you looking at your phone waiting for the call?
Yes.
Then you would have seen the text come through.
Not if I didn't have it on the thing that shows you the text.
What do you mean the thing that shows you the text?
What, do you agree with them?
I'm just listening to both sides. What do you mean the thing that shows you the text?
Say that again?
He said, what about the thing that shows you the text?
Yeah.
What do you mean the thing that shows me the text?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
Yeah, what do you mean?
I'm talking about the app. On the phone, there's different apps.
The what?
Don't you guys start messing with me.
I'm not messing with you. I'm just saying, if you wanted to see, you said you wanted me to text you.
I said to call me, not text me. Here's the text now. Hey, Phil, 1 minute.
Yeah.
Well,
if you were looking for that, Phil.
When I said call, I don't know what it is with you guys. I said to call me, not text. I didn't even say don't text me.
Exactly.
All right, forget it. I chalked that one up on me. Anyway, welcome to the program, guys. I'm here. Why am I making a big issue out of it? I'm here.
You are here, and you got here on time. And you weren't late, so why are you making an issue about it is absolutely correct. The reason why you're making... Well...
What are you upset about?
I'll tell you why I'm upset, because you had Dooley out there at that podcast for Christine Blackburn, isn't that right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Did she sing?
Now, let me just say something, okay?
Did she sing?
She sang badly, and she also said that she was going to be singing, but that you have the exclusive rights to singing... in association with anything having to do with my show. So she said that.
All right. Then she knows what the contract states. Why did she sing?
All right, Margaret.
Why did she sing?
She sang because she knew she could not sing as good as you. That's what she said. And so she did sing. She didn't even know the lyrics.
What? Well, all right. What did she sing?
She sang Fooled Around and Fell in Love, but she didn't even know the title of it. She was fooled around in something. And then she got into, you should have heard her butcher up, I Don't Know How to Love Him, which was from Jesus Christ Superstar. And Christine at one point thought that she was Yvonne Elliman, and she said, no, she wasn't.
Did she bring up the, did she tell the story about, well.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Well, move on, man.
What do you mean move on? Well, she's the one that brought it up.
I'm not moving on until I have a contract with this here show.
Yeah?
That says that I sing all the songs.
Well.
What she sang was Fooled Around and Fell in Love. She thought it was by Elvis Presley. She was all jacked up. And quite frankly, it devolved into a pretty raucous... What happened was, folks, I was escorting Bobby and Steve Dooley to a podcast this afternoon, which was in Los Angeles. That's why we were late getting back here. We're not late. I mean, we're on time, but we were late for our pre-show. And that's why I was running around making coffee and all this stuff. And we got back from there after quite a raucous... The two of them drove in their own car, thank God.
Why were you with them?
Because I'm the contact between Christine and those... Christine Blackburn, who's a television personality here in L.A. She's also an actress, and she also has her podcast called Storyworthy. And so I was there with them, and they got into their usual scrap, Bobby and Steve, and she backhanded Steve with her hand... right in the testicles.
Oh, Frank, you're kidding.
No.
No, that's got to hurt.
Oh, it hurt all right. It doubled Steve up on the floor. And I forget why this happened, but she did it not once, but twice.
That's an assault.
Tell me about it. So he was doubled up. He couldn't get any air. And so it was a mess. And then she started singing because Christine asked her to sing, and it was a... it was pretty screwy, man. So there you have it. That's what happened today. That's why she... And if you call that singing, good for you. You want to get into a big beef with her about that?
Well, you're saying it wasn't any good.
Well, what do you think? She can't sing.
My, you're rather snippy tonight, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I am rather snippy. I don't like having to haul ass any place. I don't like being late for anything. I don't like having to run for anything, you know? I don't like having to run for anything.
Nothing.
No. No, I don't. I hate running for airplanes. I hate running, and I'm telling you, I don't see any reason for it. I don't know why people in their lives have not worked their lives out yet so that they don't have to run for the... I understand, you know, I can tell people my philosophy when it comes to being on time or late or whatever for things, and they'll say, well, you know, Phil, you don't know what it's like to have, what, kids. You don't know what it's like to... I understand all of it. I've done a little bit of everything in my life when it comes to that kind of stuff, and I'm telling you that... Being late for stuff or racing for things just ain't one of my favorite things in the world to do. I've raced for damn airplanes. I've missed airplanes. And, you know, if you're with somebody, like, you know, there's a woman in your life.
Here we go. It's all about the women. I knew it.
No, it's not all about the women.
Yeah, but that's where you're saying it.
No. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I mean, no matter who it is, because it'll be friends of yours. Going to a concert, going to a ball game, going to get a plane, going any place. You know, we're okay. No, we're not okay. No, we're not. Oh, how long does it take to make it to LAX? Well, it depends on the traffic. From where we're going and making it all the way to LA International Airport, it could be 2 hours. Oh, 2 hours, please. And you're talking to somebody that has gone to the airport maybe once a year their entire life. If that. No, I'm telling you, it can take up to 2 hours if there's traffic. Or it can take this or that. Well, okay, you know, and so then you talk them into leaving early, and you get there in plenty of time, and what do they tell you? Look at how early we are. This is ridiculous, you know. By the time you go to the ticket and the thing, anyway, so running for anything, and I was running to get here, and that's the, all right, so we're done with that. Thank you, thank God we're done with that. And we are very happy to be with you guys here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The Bobby Dooley podcast, by the way, is up, and that is available to everyone. We'll talk to Bobby. We talked to her earlier this week, didn't we?
Well, you had her on early, yeah.
But we should talk to her about this whole singing thing. Her podcast is off to a rock and roll start. I don't know if a lot of you guys listening are aware of the world of podcasts. I know a lot of you are, but a lot of you are not. And if you're not, you're missing something huge. It's a sort of a mini media revolution in our midst. People are more and more listening to things on demand and less listening to things, when we tell you to. Right now, the figure is somewhere 40 to 50 million Americans are listening to podcasts. So Bobby's got one, and it's doing very, very well. So that's what we were doing for her. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show is online. Our digital life is sustained at a place called philhendryshow.com. And right now, by the way, we are streaming, or we should be, streaming on the Internet. And that is a video cast that we've got. So a lot of you guys who ask us, well, do you stream your show live anywhere? Yes, we do. On our website, we do it. And we have both a video and audio, because there's audio with the video.
You know, that's a very interesting point. People will say, now, do you have a stream, an audio stream? And I say, yes. All you have to do is listen to the video. Well, they say, well, that's a video cast.
Right.
And I say, well, yes, but there's audio. And they'll say, well, I don't know about that, this and that.
Yeah, I don't understand what that is either. Unless, of course, people want to download the show, but you can do that the next day, too. We have a podcast that's downloadable the next day on our website. We've got an archive that is unbelievable of 5,000 hours. We've got over 10 years worth of material. We have video cast archives. We have webisodes. We've got the Milwaukee Lions, which is now going to be turned into a highlight of sorts. We're probably going to turn that into a podcast in terms of highlights of the Milwaukee Lions. We have a lot of things we've done down through the years as interviews, et cetera, television pilots, and so on. So you get all of that. At philhendryshow.com with a backstage pass. If you are going to spend money for audio content, if you're going to listen to a radio show and you want to really get something that's episodic, what do I mean by that? You can listen to reruns of our show and they're good for years and years and years, you know? I mean, that's the whole thing about our radio show is you can listen to a show that we did back in 2001 or 2005 or 2006 and the show is still funny and it's still relevant in that sense. I don't think you can say that of just about any other show.
Well, you could say that about...
What other radio show could you say, hey, listen to one of our shows from 2004, it's fantastic?
What about Howard Stern?
Well, even Howard's stuff is really timely in that it is related specifically to a time and to a day and to stuff that was going on that day. Whereas our stuff is a lot more...
What do they call it? Evergreen?
Evergreen, yeah. That's a great way of...
Well, that's sort of...
What?
Sounds like an air freshener.
Yeah, it sounds like an air freshener. You want to have something that's more better.
It sounds like an air freshener, and I want to have what?
Something that's more better.
Jesus.
Oh, come on, bud. Will you get a dictionary and some grammar going on?
What?
Something that's more better. So in any event, check this out. John Bon Jovi, this just stopped me in my tracks. John Bon Jovi wants $42 million for a penthouse that he's selling in New York.
Woo!
Where does he get the guts for something like that?
John Bon Jovi, he's got the guts because he's got the... Because he may be a Jersey guy, but he's been living in Manhattan. We'll get to that story when we come back. All right, so our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're online at philandryshow.com. We'll be right back with our news and views, and Bobby Dooley will be joining us in the program as well right after this. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com. Pick up that backstage pass and watch and listen and enjoy a bizarre presentation. That's the only way that I can describe it, and I'm loath to do that, but people have said to me, well, why don't you just talk about what the show is? You're a really weird-looking guy, and what you do is strange. And I say, well, I don't think I'm that weird. Yes, you are. Okay. That wind that I'm hearing, is that Ms. Dooley?
Yeah, it's Bob Dooley out there.
What's going on?
Hold on. Bobby, I can hear you. Are you there?
Yeah, Phil, we're here. What happened was we got locked out of the main gate where we are. No, we've got, we're actually within Western Estates. We got locked out of the community center tonight because they had changed some of the security codes. Dean Efferby is here, and I just wanted to ask him how long it's going to be, Dean.
Right now, it'll be. Doesn't look too good.
And why is that?
It looks like somebody might have been trying to jimmy him. Someone trying to jimmy him? That's right, Mr. Dooley.
All right, someone was trying to break into the community center tonight, Phil.
Now, do you need to get the cops out there?
Well, we will, but right now what we have to do is get the code. We need to have the code resynced, right, Steve?
I mean, go get a code and everything.
No, you're not going to go get a man. What up?
It'll take about 15 minutes.
No, it'll be about 15 minutes, Phil, we'll be inside.
Would you be more comfortable talking to us after you get inside?
I think so. We've got a little bit of a wind blowing here tonight. You can probably hear it. It's kind of cold, so...
All right, we'll talk to Bobby in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, that will probably... Dean, when do you think?
About the pens and everything.
About 15 minutes, Phil.
I want to ask a question, if I could.
Margaret's here, Bobby.
Yes.
Well, you know what I'm going to ask.
Yes, I do, and I told Phil, and I heard Phil mention, that I said you had the contract.
No, that's all right. I know that I, and to let people know, I have an exclusive deal with the Phil Hendry Show. If there's any singing to be done, I do it. You sang, though, on the Storyworthy podcast.
Yes, I did, and I didn't sing very well, purposely, so that it would...
Yes, I understand, but are you saying you didn't sing purposely? Oh, forget it, that wind's driving me crazy.
All right, we'll let you go, Bobby.
The wind is driving me nuts.
I'm sorry, but there's...
All right, we'll let you go, and, are you going to make an issue out of that?
Well, I want to make sure that she sang rotten, so...
Yeah, she already said she sang rotten, so... No one taking anything away from you.
I understand that, but the songs that she sang have the potential of making her sound good.
All right, so she said in so many words that she sang rotten. Nobody's going to take your job of being the exclusive singing voice of the Phil Hendry Show away from you.
All the same, I would like to at some point refresh and regenerate the songs that she sang. You say, I'm sorry, Phil, but I had a Diet Coke.
God, man.
You had a Diet Coke. Let me ask you something. You know that a Diet Coke is going to make you belch.
Don't point your finger at me, please.
I apologize. You know a Diet Coke is going to make you belch.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do, Margaret. It's a carbonated drink.
And?
Then why would you drink one before the show?
Because, here's the punchline, folks, I was thirsty. God.
Yeah, if you're thirsty, Mr. Henry.
If you're thirsty and you're going to go on a radio show, then be aware that you're going to belch. Don't go, oh, gee, I'm sorry, I have to belch.
Would you rather I just belched and not said anything?
Probably, yeah. I think that would just, and that way, I could ignore it.
Yeah, well, the only problem is you don't, she doesn't ignore, I always say something.
Yeah.
What?
She always said something.
Well, what am I supposed to do? If I belch, you don't want me to say anything about it?
I would rather you not. I would rather you not. That way we can just move past it, you know.
Oh, I see. Just ignore it as if I'm not even in the room.
Margaret, are you belching because you want... Are you belching because you want people's attention?
No, I am not. I'm belching. You know why... Look at you making a big deal out of it.
Well, then why would you... If you don't want to make a big deal out of you belching, then why in the hell would you even bring up the fact that you bel... What's going on?
Phil, they have gotten the locksmith out here.
Okay, hold on for just a second, Bobby.
I'm sorry?
Hold on for just a minute.
Sure.
What are you doing, man?
Brad, they said the locksmith.
And, we were talking about me belching.
What are you guys all staring at?
I'm waiting for you to go to Bobby Dooley.
We were talking... Will you get her out of here and listen to what I want to talk about?
So my belching, in other words, is against the laws of man and nature? I don't understand.
It's rude on a radio show to be belching at a... Bud, why do you keep bringing Bobby Dooley in?
I thought you wanted her to go on before they got inside.
No, you idiot. I said to wait for them to get inside and then bring her on.
Well, it looks like it's going to be another few minutes, so I can start the report out here.
What? We're not going to do a report. I just wanted you to call. I didn't even know that you were calling in, but if you were going to call in, it was about Margaret and...
It's not about her belching, is it?
About her singing.
It's about you singing, not me.
Right, you singing.
Well, now I'm confused. I thought that we were...
You see what I did? I got so pissed off, I just put her on hold, and that's all your fault, bud.
I didn't do anything!
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. It's all your fault. When I say... Keep somebody off the air, and then I'll bring them on the air. I'll bring them on the air, and you keep them off the air, okay?
Say that again.
When I say that...
Can we get back to the belch?
No, we may not. You're an adult. You don't do that on the air. I don't need to discuss it anymore.
Get a load of Adolf Hitler, will you?
Yeah, man.
God, all running roughshod and everything.
Mein Führer.
Oh, so that's what it is? I'm going to be compared to Hitler because I'm asking you not to belch on the radio? I'm Hitler? Man.
In a manner of speaking, you're not Hitler philosophically, but you do have... It's almost as if my belch... Well...
God, you say it. It's like her belch is a Jew.
Her belch is a Jew?
I'm not making that... I'm married to a Jewish man, so don't think I'm making light of this, Phil. But it's as if... If my belch was a human, you'd have it in a...
In a concentration.
Are you laughing at me?
Well, what do you think I'm doing? What do you think I'm doing? A concentration camp for belches?
I'm speaking...
All right,
No. Hold on. You're not going to go, all right, well, I'm working with a crazy woman, so...
Frankly, that's what I'm working with. A crazy woman.
I'm saying, Phil, if I'm rude, you're doubly rude. And you're doing your goose step all over me. Telling me this, telling me that, telling Bud how to do it.
It's my show. That's what I'm going to do. My show, I tell him how to do it, you how to do it. Now, when we come back, we'll have Bobby Dooley on. We'll clear up all of this bull crap about her singing. We'll get to the podcast. We'll get to all of this stuff. And then we have a story here about PETA. The people for ethical treatment of animals, guess what? They murdered 1,600 animals last year.
All right. No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. We'll be back with that and more. And also a guy who planned a fake attack in hopes of impressing his woman. The whole thing went awry. And also John Bon Jovi selling his penthouse for $42 million. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
A concentration camp for Belgium.
You're still outside, huh, Bobby?
We are, Phil. We've had a difficult time trying to get the door to the community center jimmied open. We wanted to get in tonight to use the phone in there because we knew that we would have we'd be on your program. And then later on, we have an interview, I think, Steve, with the one of the local papers, right?
Not local papers, but maybe TV. Might even be a television station.
It might even be a television station, so... We're very excited, and I also, and I don't want to hit this one too hard, as Phil likes to say, Margaret, but there's a part of me that thinks you've got some jealousy going on account of I got on a podcast and you didn't.
I could care, Bobby, I could care less. All I asked about, and you already addressed it, did you sing I Have the Exclusive Rights?
I did sing, and it... I made it bad.
Oh, you made it bad. So do you think you sing as well as I do?
Well, you know as well as I do that... Well, I said it the way you said it. You know...
I said you know as well as... I said, do you sing as well as I do?
And I said, do you know as well as I do?
You see what I mean, Phil?
No, I don't.
She's copying what I'm saying.
Oh, will you guys come on and quit acting like third graders? The next thing you know, you're going to be talking about, did she wear the same sweater as me?
How dare you talk to me like I'm some kind of... like I'm something that you peeled off the bottom of your boot.
Well, Phil, I for one understand. I didn't mean to say you know as well as I do, because she did. But what I'm saying is, I was in that recording session with Margaret.
Oh, my... She's talking about the Blue Oyster Cult recording session. Yes, we sang back up for Blue Oyster Cult on that one song. Big wow.
Well, you asked me.
And they had to... I had to carry you... And they fixed it in the mix, and a whole lot of stuff.
All right. I know all about that song, okay? In fact, we can play it later on if people want that. Bobby and Margaret sang backup in a Blue Oyster Cult song. How did you guys get hired for that?
I got us hired. I knew Bobby at the time. When this was before she married Steve, I got us hired. I was already married. I was trying to have a baby.
All right, so big deal. So you're trying to have a baby. You know, maybe what you should have done is, well...
Lose some weight? Is that what you're going to say? Is that what you were going...
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
All right, so are you going to get up and leave? Margaret, before you get pissed off...
You've got a pair on you.
You even knew that you were too heavy.
All right, listen. What I want from you, are you satisfied with her saying she's sorry and she didn't mean to sing?
I want to hear it in... Well, I'll... What was the song?
Fooled Around and Fell in Love.
Well, all right, so this is how I would have done that. I must have been do 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 do. Was that it?
Yes.
All right.
Are you going to sing it?
I just did.
You just did. You didn't sing anything. You went, I must have been do 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 do.
I don't know the words, but what I just did there was bound to be better than anything she did. Right?
Yes, it was. Now, can I get in out of this wind before
you what?
I what?
All right, there. Bobby Dooley with us on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I must have been do-do-do-do-do.
I don't know the lyrics of the song.
Bobby, get the song for you.
All right, we can get that song up later. What was Ms. Dooley worried about?
She needed to go to the bathroom.
The what?
The bathroom.
Oh, she needed to go to the bathroom. All right. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Now, while Bud is searching for that, let me read you this. This is a mind-blower. Get a load of this story. A rare Chinese bull bought for about $3 from a yard sale in the United States sold for $2.2 million at an auction in New York on Tuesday. Are you ready for that?
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. The previous owner displayed the bull in their living room for several years before they became curious about its origins, and they had it assessed. It was bought in a U.S. yard sale for $3. It just sold at auction for $2.2 million. Who is the guy that sold it for $3?
Well, you don't know these days, Phil. It's very difficult.
Yeah, you can go and be in a Chinese restaurant and tell a guy, give me a bowl of Chinese food, and then there it is.
Yeah, they'll probably bring you in a bowl, and you'll say, man, this bowl looks good. It looks real good. But you're not going to go get it appraised.
This bowl looks good. It looks real. Have you ever eaten in a Chinese restaurant where you...
I've eaten in Chinese restaurants. I've never seen one piece of flatware or one piece of china, if you will, china, as the French say, that looked like it was worth anything more than something you would find at a yard sale or something that your daughter uses to serve tea to dolls.
What are you all pissed off about?
Just sick of her singing.
In any event, so no, I've never been to a Chinese restaurant.
What do you mean china?
That's what they call fine cookware, fine dinnerware.
Yes, it's called china.
Why?
It's called china because Chinese stuff is generally worth a lot. I don't know. I think that's it.
That's why they call it china?
Yes. Yes. Believe it or not, yes.
Because Chinese stuff is generally...
Phil, don't look at me like I'm a clod faking my way through a college application. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
All right. I mean, so Chinese stuff is usually worth more, so that's why it's called china. Nonetheless, this was bought at a yard sale for $3. The owner had it sitting in their living room for several years before they had it, assessed. The bull found in New York State was bought for a few bucks from a tag sale near the consigner's home in the summer of 2007. It was bought for a few dollars from a tag sale near the consigner's home, that would be the person who owned the bull, in the summer of 2007, just before the stock market was to go belly up, just before we had the real estate crash, just before all hell broke loose in the American economy. Here is someone with a bull in their living room that looked nice. They bought it at a yard sale because it looked nice. They probably had a very discerning eye, because if they're putting it on display in their living room, and they bought it at a yard sale.
Well, a lot of people don't know. They'll buy something.
Yeah, I put something in my living room that I thought was very tasteful. But, I mean, it was a wine bottle with a candle in it.
Yeah, I do that too.
Well, I know, yeah, but I'm not talking about a wine bottle with a candle. You already know it's worthless. What do you mean a wine bottle? What was it?
It was just a very tastefully done bottle.
Of what?
Like a Paul Mason.
A Palmasan bottle?
Or, yeah, whatever.
And you put that in your living room?
Yeah, on display.
Very, very nicely done.
Yeah, the Palmasan bottles are very nicely done. With a candle shoved in it, it makes it really cool. But we're talking here about a bowl. They bought it at a tag sale. But you're right. I think they must have had some kind of a discerning eye to say, geez, this sure is a nice little piece of china.
Don't mock the fact that I know how to pronounce the word china that I know how to pronounce the Chinese in China, not Chinese.
You know the Chinese...
I know the French pronunciation of China, that's it.
Right. Okay, the previous owner bought this thing, we already told you. At the time, the purchaser had no idea that they had happened upon, get a load of this, a 1,000-year-old treasure. 1,000 years old, which would put it in the first millennium A.D. The previous... Well, sort of. It's just the beginning of the second millennium. The previous owner displayed the bull in their living room for several years before they became curious about its origins and had it assessed. Sotheby's pre-sale estimate valued the bull, which measures just 5 inches in diameter, at between $200,000 and $300,000.
Oh, my living, breathing son of the deity. $200,000.
Yes. Now,
wait a minute. They sold it for two, 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 two.
They sold it for 2.2, is what he's saying.
Yeah, they sold it for 2.2.
Yes, they did. But you see, you open the bidding, and maybe that's what you open the bidding at. If you're going to do an auction, like Sotheby's has these auctions, and you ever heard of these auctions they have?
That the one where the guy's all, they sold?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And they basically, they put stuff out there, and they let the competing individuals that show up for these auctions bid on them, and that determines the price. It's like eBay, you know. So,
what's all I bid a little bit?
That's not what they're doing. But they're going, you know, what do I bid? What's my bid? What do you bid for me? I don't know how they do it.
You've been to auctions, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, they're just saying, I actually did an auction. I don't know anything about an auction. I don't know how to do an auction, but I did it the best way I knew how. It was for some sports memorabilia at a Hooters in Miami.
Yay. Well, that's class.
Take it easy. It was for, you know, we were raising money for the Jimmy Rice Center. So in any event, they had this stuff. And all I knew how to do was, here is a signed jersey from Dan Marino of the Miami Dolphins. Let's open the bidding at, I don't know what I would open the bidding at for that, maybe $50 or something. Okay, $50. Do I hear $50? And then I'd just see whoever raised their hand, and I'd say, there's $50 to that gentleman there. And I would point to the guy.
Well, how do you know that people are, how do you know you're going to remember who?
Because there's people that were like spotting people for me, you know, and they would say, okay, that guy's $50, you know.
What do you mean spotting?
There were guys that worked for the station that worked for us, and they were like our interns and production people, and they're saying, okay, that guy's got a $50 bid, and then they would point out other people that were bidding.
Did you ever see those real cool cats that, you know, they just nod?
Oh, there was one guy that was right down near me, and I'd say, all right, $100, $100, and I would automatically look at him, and that's what you learn to do, because you know the guys that are bidding. So there's $100 there, and I would look at the guy, and he would nod, and I'd just...
Oh, get a load of him. He nods, and you know what it means.
Yeah, but it's not that hard. You don't understand. It's not like he's trying to be cool. He just knows that he's in the bidding for serious. He wants to bid this, and he wants it. And I know that he is. So I'm hearing these bids. Naturally, I'm going to look at... Because what do I want to do?
You want to be... What, do you want to be friends with him?
Yeah, you try to all be friends with him.
What do you mean, be friends with him? What has that got to do with anything?
No, man, trying to raise money for the charity.
Exactly. I'm trying to get as much money as I can for the charity. Be friends with him.
Well, you're all, like, looking at him and stuff.
What, wasn't there an element of that? Like, oh, wow, you really know what you're doing? I want to be your friend?
No, there was no element of that. You guys are real flaky, and that's the nicest thing I can say.
Phil, I'm commenting on the social reality of it.
Just, in any event... The guy would bid, and I want to be his friend, so I looked down, hey, sir.
Well, I don't know. I can well imagine you doing that.
Yeah, in my mind's eye.
Oh, in your mind's eye, you can see me all wanting to be some guy's friend.
You guys are nuts.
Laugh if you will. Sir.
Yeah, I am laughing. So anyway, you would look at a guy who's really in the bidding. You look at him and go, yeah, and he's nodding. I think this dude finally did get the shirt. He wanted the shirt. He was topping every bid.
Yeah, but what if it goes to like $1 billion or something?
It ain't going to go to a... Dan Marino signed jersey ain't going to $1 billion. It's probably... I don't know what we got for it. $300 or something. You know, it's... People that collect sports stuff, they want it. It's valuable to them. I don't have any idea. I wouldn't know, you know, what something's worth if you put a gun to my head. All I know is that we wanted to raise a lot of money for the... charity, and we did. All right, we'll be back here on the Phil Henry Show. More about this Chinese... We haven't even finished with this Chinese bowl yet. We haven't even filled our rice bowl on this story. That coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Also coming up, we've got Dr. Ron Tarner to be joining us for our science segment. It's all ahead here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Charlie Sheen has gotten Lindsay Lohan to do an episode of his show, Anger Management. And there's actually a scene, or there's a still here from it, of Charlie in bed with her, although I would not say that, they're obviously acting,
And she's fully clothed. Do you find her attractive?
Well, I think every man finds Lindsay Lohan alluring. I think she is. She's one of those types. I think she's a, what do you call it? A sex kitten.
Well, yeah. If this was 1950, sex kitten. Oh boy.
What do you mean, sex kitten?
In other words, her model is a pleasure model, man. You remember in Blade Runner when they had the different robots?
Yeah, they had the android. Like one was a warrior, another one was a dumbass.
Not a dumbass. It's like a street fighter.
Yeah, the androids all had different purposes, and one was a thinker, and then the other, and then there was the pleasure model played by.
Yeah, who did play that?
Daryl Hannah.
The pleasure model. Yeah, if you like them.
All right, don't worry about it, Margaret. So, yeah, it was Daryl Hannah who played the pleasure. Yeah, so Lindsay Lohan's a pleasure model.
If she was a skin job.
How dare you?
That's what they called him in the movie, Margaret. They called the robot skin jobs. Yeah, if she was a skin job.
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan was a skin job.
I got your skin job, man.
I got your hit.
Get out of here, will you?
Hey.
All right, so back to the Chinese bowl. And I was just talking to Dan about a really cool movie. You ought to see it. It's called The Red Violin.
Oh, my God. I love that. I love it.
You've seen that.
The Red Violin is absolutely... Oh, my God.
All right, Margaret. Take it easy.
You don't understand. That is a wonderful film. Will you ask me if I saw it?
Yes. I didn't know you were going to...
Yeah, it's like you're all having an orgasm.
I'm going to smack...
Hey!
I'm going to kick your ass.
You're the one that said it.
No, you said it.
Take it easy.
The Red Violin, you idiot, is one of the most beautiful, tasteful... Oh!
God.
You don't know culture. None of you. I'm sitting here. I am I'm a volcano surrounded by ants. I really am.
I'm sorry.
God, sure. Call me
an ant too?
Yes, you're an ant.
All right. Well, in any event, the red volcano.
Not the red volcano, you clod. The Red Violin.
I got it. The Red Violin is a very interesting movie. It's about the life of a violin that it's created, and I think it's sometime in the 17th century, maybe a little bit earlier. And this violin is created, and the film follows the life of this violin that is made some, 400 years ago, and where it goes, who owns it, how it's passed down to another person and another person, and it traverses continents, and it survives wars, and it survives fires, and the trauma that some families go through, and all kinds of things, and it winds up at an auction house being auctioned off. In fact, the film starts with the violin in the present context that's being auctioned, and then it goes back and tells the story. But as the movie resolves, it comes back to the auction, and we are then treated to the ultimate story, or the climax of the story. And I don't remember what it was, to be honest with you.
Well, you liked the movie, but did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
But you didn't watch the end of it.
I did watch the end of it. I completely forget what the ending was. And I don't want anybody to give it away, okay? I do know that there were competing bids.
Yes, I'm not going to give it away, but there were competing bids. And here's what happened.
No, don't tell me, man, okay? Because I swear to God, Margaret, if you tell me, I'm going to be forced to... I won't hurt you, because I don't hurt a lady. I'll hurt Bud.
Well, now I want to tell you then...
Wait a second, you just said a magic word.
I won't hurt Bud. I'll hurt somebody that you like.
Well, now we get down to it. You're going to go after my son, aren't you?
Do I look like that kind of guy? I'll kick Frank's ass instead.
All right, well, that's fine. Now, I...
Just give me that. We're not going to talk about it. Getting back to the Chinese bowl. So the rare Chinese bowl that was bought for $3 at a yard sale in 2007 was estimated to be worth $200,000 to $300,000 by Sotheby's when the individual that bought this bowl and was looking at it in their living room said one day, I think I'll have this thing appraised because it sure is nice. And it just might be a lot older. It is a Ding bowl. The Ding bowl is an example of Northern Song Dynasty pottery and described by Sotheby's as remarkable and exceptionally beautiful. Now, this was found at a yard sale, folks, purchased for $3. It was assessed at $200,000 to $300,000. They got $2.2 million for it at the auction on Tuesday. This individual, the consigner. And, of course, there's a commission that you pay to people, right?
Yes. You pay the commission to Sotheby's and to the auctioneer and so forth.
The only other known bowl of the same size, form, and almost identical decoration has been in the collection of the British Museum in London for 60 years. The bowl was purchased by London dealer Giuseppe Eskenazi for $2.225 million after a prolonged battle between four bidders. And now they've got a rare coin collection that's going to be going. Four people went after this bowl. It was bought for over $2 million. $3 in a yard sale in the United States.
Now, what does that say for Americans and our appreciation for art?
Why do you say Americans?
Well, the British know what it's worth. $2 million, thank you.
Those were art dealers. Okay?
Yeah, but all the same, makes us look like asses on skates.
No, it don't. We'll be back, taking a break. World famous Phil Hendry Show, Asses on Skates. Coming up, Dr. Ron Turner next hour with the science segment.
Don't like the British know all about art and everything.
Yeah, they think about it. It doesn't matter, you jackass. It's our art dealers.
Do they have garage sales in England?
No.
Phil Hendry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, our second hour. Whoops, excuse me. I got Dr. Ron Turner on the line. We're going to have our science segment here this hour. Ironically, it will be about antiquities, if you will, because we were talking about the Chinese bowl last hour. That
what's antiquity?
Can you hold on, bud, so I can just get through maybe three sentences without you yelling?
That's a very good... I'm glad you said that, because every time Phil starts the hour, you...
You do, bud. I'm like, blah, 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 and then I hear...
But I don't know what antiquity means.
No, you don't have to find out right now, man. What you wish?
All right.
So now I'm going to start all over again. Welcome to the show. It's the Phil Hendry Show, and coming up is Dr. Ron Turner, and he's going to be talking about antiquities.
What's it mean?
I'm going to belt you.
Would you shut up?
Antiquity means something that's old. You done? Is that good with you?
Sorry.
So Dr. Turner, because we were talking about that, is going to be discussing, not because, but just it happens to be coincidental, is going to be talking about the Great Sphinx and why the Great Sphinx is missing its nose. And there's a lot of stories about that, and we're going to find, do you know that the Great Sphinx?
Well, it's very well known. The Great Sphinx's nose is gone. A lot of people thought, well, wasn't it sculpted that way? But in point of fact, there's a reason.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about that. But first, we want to tell you about our website, philhenryshow.com. There's a banner on our website where you can go directly to the various podcasts that we now offer at philhenryshow.com. And from the Phil Hendry Show, we've got two podcasts. One, of course, is our archive podcast. We have one from Bobby Dooley. And we also have a podcast right on the site itself of each day's show. So all you have to do is, if you're a subscriber to our website, you get the Daily Show's podcast. If you want to listen to our podcasts that are out on iTunes and SoundCloud and other places, you can click the banner there on the home site and go through to that. And, Bud, I know a lot of people were asking about the slides.
Yeah, I got sliding banners and stuff.
Those sliding banners that you see on the home site, you can stop and click on any one of those, and they'll take you directly to where you need to be, including where you can sign up for our backstage pass, $9.95 a month and 5,000 hours of audio. I don't know. I could be crazy, but that sounds like the deal of a lifetime to me.
5,000 hours of your show.
Of our show at $9.95 a month.
God help me. God help me and deliver me from how good I feel. Almost, well, it's almost sexual. And
all right. In any event,
I have a backstage pass.
Yeah, well, that's the one that you gave Frank. Rick,
I'm gonna.
Hey! Well, you walk into that?
What do you mean I walked into it?
When you say around a guy like that, I've got a backstage pass. What do you think he's gonna say?
Shut up, man.
Anyway, go to our website, philhendryshow.com, for more details. And pardon me for saying tail, bud. I'm sure you're going to have a crack about that.
Tail gunner?
Is that supposed to mean Frank? Is that... I want an answer. Does that mean Frank?
What?
When you said tail gunner...
Will you come on, Margaret? God.
Well...
All right, Dr. Ron Tarner, always good to have you with us, especially on a day where I can't keep the, you know, the natives are restless here, Dr. Tarner. Great to be with you. How have you been?
Phil, I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on the program.
You're welcome. Hey, it is time for our science segment, and you do want to talk about the Great Sphinx of Egypt.
Phil, I don't think in life we have too many opportunities as we progress through each and every day. To sort of step back into a time machine and look at the marvels of history and the marvels of the marvels of other ages and how other people live. But the Great Sphinx, which is in Egypt, is a wonderful opportunity for us to look at, well, rock strata, at the way the Egyptians lived, but specifically about one of the great mysteries of the Sphinx, the Sphinx is what I'm saying.
How do you spell Sphinx, by the way?
Sphinx is spelled S-P...
That was K.
No, it's not K. And Bud, this is Dr. Tarner. I know people give you a hard time. Would you just please...
Sorry, Doc.
It's S... What did you say, K?
No, I thought it was F. I'm sorry.
F.
Yeah.
No, it's not F. It's... All right, we'll start all over again. Here's how you spell Sphinx. S-P-H... Let me see. Bud, you know that I like you. I think you're a good young man. Don't give me a hard time. I want to get through the report.
I agree with that. And, Bud, Dr. Turner's asking you.
I have respect for you, Bud. I'm just asking you to be quiet.
Yeah, I will. I'm sorry.
So, Sphinx, Phil, getting back to what you asked me, how do you spell Sphinx?
Yeah, how do you spell Sphinx?
S-P-I-N-K-S. Sphinx.
No.
Oh, whoa, hold on. All of a sudden, I was thinking about Michael Spinks. I don't know why.
Yeah, you gotta talk about Michael Spinks.
See, hold on.
Be quiet, Bud.
When he talks, everything...
People listen. That's the E.F. Hutton.
Yeah, it is. That's right.
Okay, you're starting to piss me off. Dr. Turner's getting pissed off. Margaret already left to go to the bathroom. Shut up.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
I was thinking about Leon Sphinx because I was confused by all the chit-chat. And they did call Leon Sphinx Dracula, and they called Michael Sphinx Dracula. And when I started thinking about Dracula, for some reason I started to think of the movie The Mummy, and that's how I made the connection between the Sphinx and Sphinx. So,
interesting.
Is he being a smartass again?
Would you please, Bud?
Bud, please.
Yes, sir, When you said that...
I don't need you to comment. All right, Phil. So the Sphinx, in 1798, Napoleon came to Egypt. The Sphinx was buried in sand up to its neck. Between 1816 and 1858, a series of adventurers and antiquarians, including Giovanni Caviglia, August Mariette, and Gaston Maspari, attempted to clear the sand from around the body of the Sphinx, but were each forced to abandon the project due to the enormous amount of sand. Finally, in 1925 and in 1936, the French engineer Emile Barisi was successful in clearing the sand away. Now, Napoleon did arrive in Egypt in 1798, and it was the cannon practice, believe it or not, Phil, by Napoleon's troops that caused the nose of the Sphinx to eventually be shattered and to be destroyed because the French troops were taking target practice with the artillery.
You know, I heard that story, and it's amazing. Somebody thought it was the German troops in World War II.
No, this was much, much sooner. And the German troops in World War II were commanded by a man who was not what you would think of when you think of a German a Nazi general. They were commanded by Erwin Rommel, who was a very humane man. He was a man that respected life, was a good warrior, but it's very hard to imagine Erwin Rommel allowing his troops to destroy something as valuable and as certainly as ancient as the Sphinx. The story, though, is that it was Napoleon's troops taking target practice with their cannons that eventually got the nose of the Sphinx to get, you know, blown off.
Right. That's not true.
Yes, it's true, you idiot. You know,
all right, let hold on for a minute.
No, yes, it is true. I'm a doctor, all right?
Yeah, but you're an astronomer.
I don't care. I've done study. Do I have to put up with this?
What is it with you, bud?
That's not, they don't know if that's a true story or not.
What don't they know?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
You for sure.
Bud, I can tell you that I've got more proof of what I'm saying than you have. That it isn't true.
I'm just saying that could be an old wives' tale.
An old wives' tale? What are you calling me, anyway?
He's not calling you an old wife.
Well, pretty much he is. Isn't that right?
No, I'm just saying that they're not really sure.
Yes, they are sure.
All right, let's take a break. But I want you to leave the studio for a while here so we can...
I didn't do anything wrong!
Just get out of here, will you?
Get him out of there. Get him out of there before I go nuts.
Just get out of here, will you?
I didn't do anything wrong.
We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and the Sphinx. How did it lose its nose? Well, according to Dr. Turner, Napoleon's troops, using it for cannon practice, blew the nose right off the Sphinx. We'll be back with more of this fascinating tale right after this on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Get out of here, will you?
The Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, bud. Truth's a bitch, bud. Hey, bud.
Whatever.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. Phil Hendry Show. Bud Dickman's been given, I guess, the closest thing I can call it is a timeout. And we're going to continue with Dr. Ron Turner.
And by the way, Dr. Turner, I admire you greatly. I do have some questions.
Margaret, that's fine. I don't mind answering questions. But when I have Dickman, and this is a very predictable thing, when I come on Phil's show, I'm not blaming Phil, but it is predictable. When I come on this show and I make a statement of fact, and I have Dr. in front of my name. That means doctor, and Mr. Dickman is heard to shout out from something that sounds like like he lives in a vault, and you can hear his voice echoing off the walls of the vault as he says, "No, it isn't."
Well, what do you mean in a vault?
Well, I mean, it's humiliating for a man who is a man of science like myself to be mocked and jeered by something living in a vault.
Why is that?
You don't make the connection.
No.
Because a scientist, if anything's in a vault, he made it and put it in there. So you're superior to that. You understand?
Yeah, okay. I mean, so in other words, because Bud would be representative...
Bud is representative of something that I made in my laboratory and then stuck in the vault. And now he's telling me how it is? I don't think so.
Wow, that's...
What does that mean, wow?
Well, it's not the way a regular... We're civilians. You're the doctor.
That's correct.
All right. And so we don't think the way you think, Dr. Turner. That's quite... It's interesting.
Well, it's how it is when you're a doctor and a scientist.
All right, so I mean, so listening to anybody whose voice echoes off a vault?
No, I'm saying not echoes off a... If he's clearly an imbecile and his voice is echoing as if... I'll give you an example. My brother-in-law used to talk to me through the door of the bathroom, and I know that Margaret... I'm not making the comparison to you, but Phil often gets upset with you because you're talking through the door of the bathroom.
Well, yeah, because he's got to be on mic.
All right, but you do get upset.
Yeah.
All right, well... It's not that Phil thinks you're stupid, because I know he doesn't, but there may be something in Phil's genetic makeup, what we call the racial memory, that when he hears your voice bouncing off of tile, he may be remembering a past life when he had a...
Well, like a ghoul in the vault.
Yes, and I use the word a ghoul in the vault.
I am not a ghoul.
No one's saying you are, Margaret, and I'm not even saying I agree with Dr. Turner. A past life?
Well, that's not scientific, I understand that, but the theory was put forth by Dr. Robert Jaber, who was at our, we call it as a joke, the Ghoul Roundtable. Now, what it really is a an annual meeting that we have on papers and discussions that originate on the creation of life.
And you call that the Ghoul Roundtable?
As a joke. Jesus.
All right, well, we're talking with Dr. Ron.
No, you got to, Phil, you got to lighten up.
Do I got to lighten up? You're telling me.
Can we get back to me? I'm the doctor and I'm the guest.
All right, fine. So when your brother...
When Bud was yelling at me and it was echoing off of whatever he's sitting in there...
He's in our studio, so what you were hearing was the soundproofing in our studio, which I guess isn't very good.
Yeah, I guess it isn't. Otherwise it wouldn't have sounded like it was bouncing off the walls of a crypt.
And you had some kind of a genetic reaction?
Can we just move on, Phil, because I'm not going to keep explaining this to you, all right? It sounded like...
Have you ever... Well, maybe I shouldn't ask this.
No, you shouldn't. Now, moving on to the Sphinx...
Wait, hold on. What shouldn't she ask?
Believe me, Phil, just leave it alone, will you? Please, just leave it alone.
No, Dr. Turner, I think I need to ask it. Have you been involved in experiments?
Damn you to hell, Henry.
What did I do?
Damn you.
Have you been involved in experiments in creating artificial life?
You're kidding.
Well, what do you think's going to happen when I go to a ghoul round table? Am I going to sit there? What am I talking about? How to grow strawberries? Yes. All right, damn you, yes.
I thought so.
Well, okay, so you're involved in a seminar on how to create artificial life. Are we talking about Frankenstein here? Are we talking about Frankenstein here, Duck?
Something worse. Much worse.
I knew it.
Well, what are you talking about?
Do you recall a series of murders that were committed? Do you recall a series of murders that were committed in northern Nova Scotia in the late 80s?
No, I don't.
I do. The Remminger murders.
That's correct. Something that I had been working on at a laboratory that I had rented. I needed peace and I needed quiet to finish my work. I rented a small laboratory in the northern part of that province late one summer, the late 80s. I remember that I had, at the time, just buried my ex-wife, my now ex-wife, Cindy, I don't remember.
It's funny how many guys we have on the show that don't remember the names of their wives.
Can I finish?
Go ahead.
Well, forget it.
Why are you saying that?
Because I'm not going to tell a story while a laughing boy there is.
I'm laughing because I don't believe anything you guys are saying, okay?
Well, Phil, all I know is I'm a journalist, and I remember the stories coming across the wire.
Okay?
No, no, not okay. Not okay. What's your name? What's your wife's name?
What do you mean, what's my name?
What's your wife's name? Candy, Cindy, I forget. Northern Nova Scotia, huh?
That's right.
What was the name of the town?
You were going to say village.
Because Nova Scotia is a small province in Canada. It's not a very populous country. God knows how many people are in Nova Scotia. I don't know. So what was the name of the village? All right, I'll call it that.
Well, it was a town. It wasn't a village.
All right, what was the name of it?
It was... Boy, you think I'm a liar, don't you?
I think you guys are full of crap.
Phil, I didn't say he created a ghoul. I'm simply saying that he might have had something to do with the murders.
I didn't murder anyone, I can tell you that right now.
Okay, then what are you talking about?
No, I don't think I'm going to tell you now.
Okay. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to call up whatever passes for the legal authority there in whatever part of Nova Scotia you're talking about, and I'll tell them I happen to know a guy down here in the United States who says that he had something to do with the Remminger murders in northern Nova Scotia.
All right, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, huh?
It was a hoax.
Why?
Because I wanted to have a paper to present at the Ghoul Seminar. Okay? You know the problem I've got with Hawking? You know that every year he was coming up
So this gets back to Stephen Hawking again. Every single thing.
Is this this jealousy of Stephen Hawking?
Yes. Hawking. Every time I turn around, it's Hawking. Here comes a pretty girl. Must be Hawking's. Oh, look at that, a brand new hover round. I guess Hawking ordered a few of them. Hey, did you hear a joke? Oh, let me guess. Did Hawking write it? Have you heard about this magazine? Hawking found it. Take a look at the breasts on that. It's Hawking's woman. Over and over and over again.
And so you decided to pretend like you created some creature to get some of the thunder away from Hawking.
Because Hawking had made advances in the study of amino acids. It looked as if Hawking was going to break through the amino acid barrier and was actually going to create the basic amino acids of life.
Where was this?
At his laboratory, like everybody has one.
Well, all I knew, Phil, is that these ridiculous stories, and that was a hoax.
Yes.
Did you get arrested?
No, I didn't get arrested. We were let off with a reprimand.
How old were you at the time?
27.
27-year-old man.
Phil, I was looking to bust out. I needed some publicity.
So you dummy up some murders committed by a Frankenstein monster, and you're the guy that did it. I'm ashamed of you. I'm ashamed that I'm talking to you. I'm ashamed that I kicked Bud out of the studio because he was bugging you.
Well, are you telling me I'm full of crap about Napoleon, too?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, Phil.
No, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Can I come back in?
Yes.
Sit down.
It's always Hawking.
Phil Hendry. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. I really got to apologize for that. That was absolutely the most childish bunch of it just blows my mind, you know?
I didn't do any of it.
Shut up before I swear to God, man. Maybe, you know, before the beginning of summer, before the beginning of summer 2013, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to belt you, Bud, so hard, man, that I'll go to jail for it. I blame you partially for that.
Yeah, but I didn't make up the stuff. Bud didn't make it all up.
I've got to go with Bud on this. He didn't make up the Remminger murders.
I don't even know if such a thing ever happened.
No, it didn't happen.
No, I mean, I don't even know that there was a hoax called the Remminger murders. I don't know anything. This guy, Tarner, we've had him on the show. He's got such a problem with Dr. Stephen Hawking that he's got this competition going that he dummied up murders by a creature that he created just so he could get some publicity away from Stephen Hawking.
Phil, some people are obsessed that way. Some people are obsessed that way.
You imagine a guy being that sick? You're gonna make up a ghoul?
You'd make up a ghoul, man. You talk about a ghoul. Well, yeah.
He did make up a ghoul. He wanted people to think he made up some creature in a laboratory, and every time he hears someone's voice echoing off of tile, it's like a...
What?
It's like a ghoul in the vault. All right, so thanks a lot for nothing, Doc, wherever you are. The Sphinx, we still don't know how it lost its nose. How's that?
It's calling in. No. Phil didn't want you on.
Put him on.
Yeah, same to you. You're the guy that did it.
Put him on, Bud. Hey, Doc.
And I'll tell you something else. Are we on the air?
Yeah.
Okay, that guy there, that Dickman, I'd love to get a blood test on him. Because I'll tell you, I've never created artificial life. You're right. I've never done that. I lied.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, if Dickman isn't a refugee from someone's laboratory, I swear to God,
That's it.
Yeah, see? What'd he say?
You're not listening. He says you're a refugee from someone's laboratory. You were created.
I bet you that's true. Shut up. That's you were created in Blackula's laboratory.
Oh man, you know something, man? You are so lame. I can't even get offended by what you say anymore.
Yeah, you are pretty lame, bud. Discovery Duck is special uncovers the secrets of the KKK. Speaking of laboratories and bullcrap. Wednesday night, Discovery Channel will air a one-hour special, KKK Beneath the Hood.
Well, what are you laughing at?
I just think it's a pretty funny title, if you think about it.
Yeah, Beneath the Hood.
Oh, yeah, like a car.
Yeah. KKK Beneath the Hood. That, let's get in there and tinker around. That delves into the truths and secrets behind one of the largest surviving white supremacist organizations, the Ku Klux Klan. This exclusive clip from the docu-special reveals that the organization, which was formed on Christmas Eve of 1865, the same year the American Civil War ended, began in an unexpected way as a sophomoric gag. As a gag. In his first televised interview, Richard Bondurant, a traditionalist American Knights member, talks about the Klan's surprising origins. According to Bondurant, the group began innocently enough in a law office in Pulaski, Tennessee. Six Confederate Civil War veterans were deciding how to occupy their time now that the war was over. And they agreed that forming a mysterious organization similar to college fraternities in which they could engage in pranks and hazing would be fun. It was during this time that the name Ku Klux Klan was conceived. At first, the name was not intended to be menacing. Bondura said Ku Klux was a variation of the Greek word kyklos, which means wheel or band. It wasn't long, though, before the organization turned violent and terrorist. In 1869, the first era of the Klan disbanded under pressure from the federal government, but factions of the KKK continued to exist to this day. Discovery was able to gain access via acclaimed photojournalist Anthony Caron, who has long documented the secret world of the Klan, as well as white nationalists, the Westboro Baptist Church, the Maricopa County Jail, and more. What's with the Maricopa County Jail?
I don't know. I think that's the sheriff down there. Sheriff,
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, what's the guy's name?
I don't know. Sheriff of Cochise County.
Sheriff of Cochise County. That, whoever the sheriff is, boy, they're lumping him in with the Westboro Baptist Church and the white nationalists and the wow, you know.
And the wow?
No, I'm just saying. In this additional clip, see, they've got clips that accompanied the story, so forget about that. We'll show you the clips later on. More little-known aspects of Klan members' existence are revealed, specifically that there was an entire pop culture movement exclusive to the Klan. Bondura shares his collection of KKK artifacts. Now, keep in mind, the guy that they're talking to, this guy Richard Bondura, is a traditionalist American Knights member. Does that mean he's in the Klan?
Well, it sounds like it, yes.
Well, I'm talking about a traditionalist American Knight.
I don't know what that means. Is that a Klansman, or is that just some guy that's in an organization called the Traditionalist American Knights?
It's got to be the Klan.
Why?
Well, they use that word Knights.
Knights of Columbus? You think they're in the Klan?
Well, I think the jury has to be out on something like that, don't you?
My father was in the Knights of Columbus. You trying to tell me that they're Klan?
Why do you use the word Knights?
Why does anybody use the word Knights? A knight is a warrior.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd think they'd lose it now.
What was your father's attitude? I mean, I'm not saying he was. What was his attitudes toward black people?
My dad was completely and totally cool with the races. He didn't have any, never used, what are you talking, Knights of Columbus. Hello.
Yeah, but they're Catholic. And I know that you say, and you're a good guy, but.
Yeah, the Catholics are kind of weird.
Oh, get out of here. Knights of Columbus. The Catholics are weird. Well, I'll give you that. Catholics are weird, but no weirder than anybody else. The Knights of Columbus. You got to be kidding me.
Why are you saying it's Knights? They got to change their name, otherwise there's suspicion on it.
Well, I wouldn't say they have to change their name.
Margaret, you know, I'm surprised at you. Just because they use words. Should we start thinking of, like, King Arthur, Knights of the Round Table?
Who are they?
Yeah, what are they about?
Let's see. They don't exist, number one. They're part of legend, number two. It was King Arthur, number three, who lived way back in the beginning of whatever the hell, number four.
And number five was the Klan.
Yeah.
No, they weren't Klan. They were in England, and it was way before America was invented. And it didn't even exist. It was a made-up story.
Yeah, but still, it could be a made-up story about a Klan.
Look, man, knights doesn't mean clan. Knights is a word that is used for traditional warrior. Got nothing to do with clan. The clan took it. The clan took the cross. The clan's taken all kinds of stuff and turned it into clan stuff. Hey, Robert, the cross. Did the clan invent that?
No. That's a very good point.
Thank you, Dr. Dickman. Anyway, Bondura shares his collection of KKK artifacts. Why, how nice. Something he's never done with non-Klan members. There, right there, the guys in the Klan.
Told you.
Anyway, he calls these pop culture relics the Great Lost Mystery and reads off some titles from the Klan's albums. The Klansman and the Rain, We Belong to the Ku Klux Klan, and the Gathering Klan. At the time, these albums were widely available at record and department stores, according to Mr. Bondura. In 1915, the second iteration of the KKK had emerged. According to the documentary, the second era of the Klan, which was relatively mainstream at this point, grew to tremendous numbers. They had approximately 4 million members by 1925 and was not necessarily stronger in the South than in the North. The Klan back in the early part of the 20th century was huge, and they had big parades, you know.
Well, why is that?
I don't know. Maybe if we read on here, the popularity of the organization at that time resulted in some high-profile members. It is speculated that Harry Truman, 33rd president of the United States, was a member of from 1920 to 1922, but his family to this day denies it. On the other hand, Warren G. Harding was actually sworn in as a Klansman in the White House. No topic is taboo in this Discovery special event, from cross-burning ceremonies to in-depth interviews with Klansmen of all ranks. Filmmakers even go inside the home of a Klan family.
Why did the Klan get powerful?
I bet you I know the reason. I mean, I'm speculating, but at the turn of the century, because of the emerging labor movement in this country, there was conflict between workers, and there was conflict between the owners of companies, the owners of these plants, and there was violence. Now, that wasn't necessarily the reason that I would give for the Klan's emergence. What was the result of that immediately was a thing called the movement of the anarchists. Anarchists were people that decided that violence was the best way to solve the problems of the workers in this country. Workers were being treated very poorly. They did not have the protections they have today. They were worked 12 hours a day. They were worked 6 days a week. Nonetheless, when the companies decided to, break these strikes by violent means, and that included the use of firearms and, opening fire on these crowds of striking workers, the workers themselves brought in their own guys, and there were these pitched battles. Then along came the anarchists, and the anarchists not only targeted the companies and corporations, they targeted individuals. In the case of one anarchist, they targeted the President of the United States.
Who?
William McKinley was killed by an anarchist. If that had happened to if a communist had actually killed Kennedy, that would have been if they would have found absolute proof that Lee Harvey Oswald was a commie, it would have been a much, much more disturbing time in the history of this country, and there would have been probably a far greater reaction to it. As it was, an anarchist killed McKinley. And then comes the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. So these traditional American, you want to call them values, but the traditional American structure, the traditional American lifestyle at that time was being challenged by anarchists, by Bolsheviks, by striking workers, all kinds of stuff.
And so the Ku Klux Klan came along to solidify American life.
I think they came along as a traditional group to say, enough is enough. You know, we're the Klan, and we're not going to have it. Look what happened when you freed the slaves. Look what happened in the Civil War. Look at all that stuff. See, now we're going nuts.
Oh, that sounds like a bunch of hooey.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Well, fine. I'm just giving you my theory. I don't know if that's the facts.
Not all that stuff about the Ku Klux Klan was formed because on a what?
Anarchists.
That's the same as a commie, huh?
Look, you guys, I'm done. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, Phil, don't take your ball and go home.
Look it, man, I'm just giving you an opinion. I'm not telling you guys. You can give me your own theories when we come back. Okay, bud? Does that sound good to you?
I might need to take a poke at it, yeah.
You want to take a poke at this?
Hey, watch it.
are you pointing at your crotch for?
You're joking.
We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You know, I don't want to be embarrassing anybody. I certainly don't want to embarrass Dr. Tarner any more than he already has been. But the Sphinx story of the nose getting blown off by Napoleon's, what are you looking at, bud?
Well, you should say cannon.
Look, I'm going to tell you guys once and for all, just because I use the word blow or blown off doesn't mean I've got to qualify it with excuse my language.
Well, you don't know.
Well, I feel I'm a woman and I don't appreciate it.
You don't appreciate what? Because I said they blew his nose off? Good God, are we getting sensitive around here, man. I'll tell you what, thank God for podcasts. I don't have to apologize for anything there.
You never know, people are going to tell you to apologize.
I ain't apologizing for nothing. I've never apologized for anything, and I never will. On the air, anyway. And they blew off his nose, okay?
Yeah, man, you can say that you blew your nose.
Don't say blew your nose, say blow your nose.
That's what I mean.
Well, still, I'm not going to be running around going, oh, I blew my nose, I blew my nose.
You're a lady, you can't.
What are you talking about?
Phil, just never mind. Go on with your story.
You're a lady, she can't say...
Never mind, Phil.
Yeah, just go on with the story.
Hey, bud, don't wave your hand at me like I'm, you know, working for you, okay? The Sphinx has no nose, and this is because, according to a documentary that the author of this particular article that I'm reading... When he was an 8-year-old, they told him that the Sphinx had no nose in this documentary because Napoleon's troops blew the nose off during cannon practice. But that is not necessarily the truth. So it turns out Dr. Tarner didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground, and you were right, bud.
See?
All right, but wait. No one knows how the Sphinx lost its nose. See? No one knows what happened to the nose there. There's a little bit of whimsy. Huh?
I don't get it.
Neither do I.
No one knows what happened to the nose. In any event...
No, it's fine.
Well, sorry. In any event, there is a writer, for instance, who wrote an article about Hollywood distorting and trashing Egyptian history. His name is Tim Ryan. He wrote this article around March of 2000. Maybe it was around the time that The Mummy came out. I don't know, the one with Brendan Fraser. But nonetheless, he wrote this article saying that Hollywood had done such a terrible job in distorting and bashing and ripping apart Egyptian history... And then he reported bitterly that Napoleon's soldiers once used the Sphinx's nose for target practice.
So he got it wrong, even as he was trying to protect Egyptian history.
Yes. Some Egyptian government websites still repeat this, quote, libel that Napoleon Bonaparte certainly committed many crimes, but desecrating the Great Sphinx is not one of them, but they do report that he did. Bonaparte apparently brought with him to Egypt all kinds of scholars, people that could study Egyptian history and aspects of Egyptian culture. The reason was there was a dawning fascination in Europe with what they called in those days Orientalism, that which is non-European. And harming a cultural treasure like the Sphinx simply did not match the practice of the French in Egypt at that time. The British, on the other hand, who later occupied Egypt, were a much more cavalier with their treatment of various antiquities, including mummies. The British used to stoke their fires with mummified, you know, bodies and so-called mummified humans and sacred cats. They would find these...
What are you talking about? A real cat?
No, man, a mummy.
You're telling me they mummied up a cat?
They didn't mummy it up. They mummified it.
Well,
they had mummy cats.
Yeah.
Wow, that blows me away. I had no idea. So they mummied, well, not mummied up, but they mummified. Did they mummy up a dog? I'm not mummy up a dog.
They didn't mummy up. I don't know what they mummied up. And don't say mummied up. It's mummified.
Well, I'm just using the shorthand.
Did they mummy it up?
Mummy up what, man?
Dogs.
I don't know. They mummied up. Would you guys knock it off with the mummied up? It's mummified. They mummified dogs. They mummified humans.
But stands to reason you mummy up a dog.
They didn't mummy up any dogs that I'm reading up.
See, you're saying it, Phil, so we might as well use it. Did they mummy up a dog or did they not?
I don't think so.
Why do you say that?
Because I've never heard of mummied up dogs, okay?
Now you're saying mummied up.
The vandalism enraged Egyptian peasants living near the Great Sphinx. Apparently, the vandalism that was committed by Sufi Muslims and their leader, the fanatical Muhammad Sayyim al-Dahar, in 1378. He attacked the Sphinx with a crowbar, apparently in a solo effort.
Why did they have a crowbar in 1378 when they didn't have hubcaps? I'm just kidding.
That's pretty good, Ms. Gray.
Thank you.
In any event...
What's wrong with you, Phil?
Yeah, Mr. Reddy, you're all, like, bummed out and everything.
Would you guys shut up and let me finish, okay? You got me talking about mummied up a dog and crowbars for hubcaps, and I can't even get into the story about this Sphinx thing. The reason why Tarner came on here was to talk about this. Then we got into it with him, and he starts telling us about how he created some ghoul that committed murders in Nova Scotia, and that turned out to be bullcrap, and we had to force him off the air, otherwise be the laughingstock of whatever's left of our listening audience.
Yeah, but it's a good thing you pointed it out anyway.
Yeah, sure. Fantastic. I think that he's right in one instance, but I think you were created in a laboratory.
I don't care.
You don't care if you were created?
No.
Man, I'd care if I was created.
Why?
I wouldn't know when my mom and dad was.
Well, you done? You finished?
What?
Are you finished talking about being created in a laboratory?
Well, I look at these two, and that's got to be the truth. There's got to be something to that.
Yeah, well, I don't care. Maybe you was created in a laboratory.
I doubt it, seriously.
Okay.
Phil, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Phil.
I'm going to get up and leave. You guys can finish the show there yourselves.
I don't know how to do that.
Well, you sure do know how to run your big fat mouth.
You're
talking about who was made up in a laboratory, and I'm trying to figure out how the Sphinx lost its nose. Which do you want to talk about?
The Sphinx.
Thank you. The Sphinx was not nearly as impressive in 1798 as it is today. The bulk of the beast had been covered for years by blowing sand, and only the head stood clearly above ground. The sand would not be totally cleared away until 1905, although evidence suggests this clearing had been performed multiple times in the past. Unlike the pyramids, most of the Great Sphinx is carved from the living rock. Only some parts are imported stone, and it's unclear how much of this was original or the result of later repairs. And unlike other Sphinx statues set in pairs as guardians, the Great Sphinx stands alone. There you go.
So what happened to the nose?
I don't know. No one knows. No one knows what happened to the nose. Napoleon didn't do it. They say that Napoleon would never think of doing something like that. So that's bull crap. You know what I think happened? I think it fell off.
Yeah, right.
It fell off. It got old and fell off. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh my God.
Shut up.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com, and a reminder that the Bobby Dooley podcast is up and alive and is rocking, well, the entire podcast universe. It's called the Bobby Dooley Podcast. Check it out at SoundCloud, iTunes, and elsewhere. And you can also access the Bobby Dooley Podcast through our podcast banner on the homepage of philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. And for your $9.95 a month, you've got almost 5,000 hours of audio. You have over 10 years of archived radio shows. You have a video cast, the archives of the video cast, and other special feature that we're going to be doing later on as we progress. We've got a whole year full of crazy stuff planned for you. The Milwaukee Lions and their regular football season will be upon us. We also have a Milwaukee Lion highlight reel that's going to be produced. And who knows? Who knows what will be available when it comes to the Milwaukee Lions and the Bobby Dooley podcast? Who knows what will be available on the terrestrial side of things? That's right.
Oh, so she's going to get a radio show.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Yeah, well, you're in it. You're whatever that word would you use?
Intimate?
Yeah.
Don't be yelling across the room.
Now, I keep telling him to use a microphone.
I mean, you're intimating it.
That's right. Good use of the word, bud. But I'm not saying for sure. All right. Anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Pick up a backstage pass, though, and take advantage of all of the marvelous stuff that's going on. You're asking me, what was that song?
Yes, that's a very cute song, Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe. I don't know if I like that.
Kendrick Lamar with the song. It's a rap. It's a new song by Kendrick Lamar called Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe. And I like it because...
Pretty much how it is.
Pretty much how it is. No, it's just, it's funny, especially the part about... Anyway,
It's a hip-hop song, folks. We don't want to, you know... I know this is talk radio.
Don't put the audience... Never mind, folks. Woman shocked in shower by stray voltage wins $4 million lawsuit. Are you at risk, too? Woo!
Look at that shirt. It's burned.
Her shirt ain't burned, you jackass. That's the design of the blouse that she's wearing. You can't really see her in that shot as we were putting it up to the camera, the Phil TV camera. A California woman who sustained repeated electrical shocks while showering won a $4 million lawsuit against her power company on Wednesday. Woo! The ruling against Southern California Edison.
Well, that is a big lawsuit.
Yes. And we've all heard of Con Ed, which is Consolidated Edison.
But that was Connecticut, but...
I used to think it was Connecticut Edison. It's Consolidated Edison. But Southern California Edison is a biggie. And they've been around a long time. And this was a suit and a ruling against them. It was a long-awaited end to the saga of Simona Wilson, a single mother of three boys who suffered from major medical problems as a result of stray voltage from a nearby substation, according to reporting in the Easy Reader News of Hermosa Beach, California.
We probably should get Chris Norton on.
Well, Chris is not Hermosa Beach.
Well, it's close. He's in Redondo Beach, I think.
All right, bud, if you want to get Chris Norton on the line...
Yeah, let's get him. Fault, call him up.
What?
What did you say?
I said I'm going to call up.
Sounds like you've been shocked taking a shower. Just call him up, man.
All right.
Chris Norton is he's not a reporter, and as a matter of fact, he's not really a broadcaster. He is the producer of adult films. He does porn. And this is where this is the levels that we're sinking to.
Phil, I'm just saying he's in the area.
Chris Norton from Hermosa Beach, California. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, Mr. Wright. How are you doing?
Good. I wanted to ask you about a story that we are seeing here in the news. This is a woman who won a suit against Southern California Edison, and it is to the tune of $4 million. And she won this suit because she was being shocked in her shower by some stray voltage from a substation. You know about this story?
Well, if you're talking about a woman being shocked in her shower by a stray voltage, a lot of that comes to me as an idea for adult film.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
I was just making a joke.
He's talking about an adult film.
I'm sorry, Mr. Aaron. I was just talking about, I'd probably make an adult film that would be based on habits. First of all, I apologize.
I know, I'm asking a real story. I'm not asking about adult films.
I understand that, but I'm just saying my mind a lot of times is thinking in terms of this and how I might turn a normal situation into this.
So the lady's in the shower and she's getting shocked.
Yeah, I was going to say that you could turn that into some kind of accessible film. That's all I'm saying.
Well, do you know the story?
Yes, sir, I do know the story. Her name is Simona Wilson, and what I read in a Redondo Beach paper, I don't get no Hermosa Beach paper, but I do get a Redondo Beach paper, that Southern California Edison, they said they're not in favor of the lawsuit. They got two more lawsuits from people in Redondo Beach. She was living in Redondo Beach when she got shocked.
Oh, so this is in your neighborhood?
Well, it's certainly in my town.
Why does it say Hermosa Beach?
Well, that's where she lives now.
Oh, okay. So she split.
Right. She split, and she's over in Hermosa Beach. It's pretty weird what happened. It started in 2011, and apparently this woman started to feel sick to her stomach. She had nausea. She had Zosyn, numbness in her limb, and she decided that she replaced the shower that had been kind of weird, and she replaced the shower with one that was built in the floor, and apparently the shower head was electrified, and every time she touched it to make an adjustment, there was a low level of current that run through her body, and that's called stray voltage, you know.
That's all that they did different there, Chuck.
What?
Well,
hold on, bud. So was it shocking her in a noticeably, when we think of an electric shock?
No, no, it wasn't. It was not just, it wasn't going, you know, wow, you know, and then she was like, you know, having some sort of sexual, I mean, speaking of sex, you know, it was almost, it, when you think of a shock, you think of a sexual, you know, a sexual shock, you know.
No, not an orgasm. We're talking about just if someone who is electrocuted in a way that is very obviously can cause unconsciousness.
No, it was not that kind. What it was she was touching the nozzle. And see, I have to tell you, Mr. Henry, everything I'm saying about it is lends itself to assess, to a script about sex, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, we're not talking about sex right now, man.
Okay, man, I'm, God.
Take it easy, Robert.
Well, this guy's talking about a movie. We're talking about a lady got electrocuted.
What?
We're talking about a lady got electrocuted, man.
All right, man. I mean, I was just saying, you know, you gotta understand what I do, okay?
Yeah, you all you do, man, is you work as a pharmaceutical rep, and you ain't no porn maker, not yet.
You know something, man? I'm working on it, okay?
Yeah, you working? I'm working on something too, you know. Until you start making money for it.
All right, hold on for a minute.
God, man, I didn't know it's gonna come on your program and get attacked. All I'm talking about is if you wanted to make a film for an adult film, if you want to make adult film, you're going to have to put sex in it, and this lends itself to a sexual situation, is all I'm saying.
Okay, fine, but I don't want to talk about that right now. I'm talking about this woman that got electrocuted. She was living in your town, Redondo Beach. Now let me get this right. She began to feel nausea after replacing a shower nozzle.
Yeah, she had a she replaced a elevated shower nozzle with one that was built right in the floor, and the shower head was electrified. So every time she touched it to make an adjustment, she got stray what they call stray voltage. In many ways, if you want to put it into porn, you know, I know you don't want to put it in porn terms, but I feel it would help to put it in a porn term. And put it in a porn term, it was like a, you know, she was getting, I guess, upset, assessed, you know.
Never mind, okay? She was getting a low-level electrocution is what she was getting.
Yeah, but that doesn't tell the story.
We understand, Chris. She was being electrocuted, but not in such a way that it was being noticeable.
Yeah, but it was like low-level sex.
No, it wasn't low-level sex. It was an electrocution that caused this woman very serious health issues.
I understand it, Mr. Henry. I'm just saying, okay, forget it.
Yeah, okay, so what next?
Then, apparently the electrical current flows on paths that it's not intended for it to flow on, okay? And so, you know, they're worried now about electrical shocks if you're shaving or electrical shocks. But it's rare, so, but she did get, you know, shocked and everything. She apparently suffered, you know, health problems and like that. But, I mean, I was interested in it.
All right, so basically the lady was getting this low-level electrical shock that caused this physical problem, and it was because of this stray voltage coming from the substation. The thing wasn't wired wrong?
What?
The shower nozzle.
I don't think so. I think it was just electricity was just kind of going, you know, just flowing into it or something.
Why?
I don't know. Just was.
All right, I'll get a hold of the story. Chris, thank you very much.
I mean, you know, if I'm going to be on your show, at least I can be allowed to promote my latest film project.
Well, all right, well, what is it?
Well, I just thought of it now, you know, Seth, you know, the shower Seth.
you work on that and come back on.
Well, I mean...
All right, so...
You want it on.
No, I chalked that one up. That was my mistake. I said, get Chris Norton on the line. He's a...
The man is a raving lunatic, an imbecile, and has a speech impediment. I don't know why you put him on the air.
Because he's in that area. All right. So this woman, Wilson, she seems not to be alone in her electrified shower plight. In September, a New York couple filed a lawsuit against a local utility because they claimed their multimillion-dollar home, which is next to a substation, was filled with this kind of random stray electricity. There are times I would go to the sink and there's a little water on the rim and I might put my arm in it and boom, I'd feel a shock, said Millie Mendelson to the New York Post. So they're trying to say that you may be in danger. Well, I wouldn't worry about it, folks, unless it happens to you. Let's put it that way. And I've never personally had any random electricity that I didn't want. All right, we'll be back with more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show in this final hour of our program. What do you got over there, bud?
There's a story here about a millionaire is living in a closet.
A millionaire living in a closet, huh?
Yeah, wow, 420 square feet.
All right, well, we'll find out about that when we come back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth millionaire in a closet. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here. I just saw this story. I don't know. Did you know that Ahmadinejad was almost shot by the Secret Service by accident?
Well, I don't know that anyone cares.
Yeah, but we could get in an international situation.
Well, think about this, man. The Secret Service, this is why people always fascinate me. On the one hand, you have people saying, well, the Secret Service would never tip their hand like they shot him. Let's say Ahmadinejad was shot and killed in America. And the conspiracy theorists would begin their usual prattle. Now, the first thing that they would say is there's some kind of hidden thing. So no one's going to say the Secret Service did it. You think the Secret Service are going to want people to know they shot Ahmadinejad? Of course not. No, he was shot, ostensibly by that shoe salesman who just happened to have a pistol and whose family had been tortured in Iran, but that's got nothing really to do with it. It was really, you know, they'll draw all of this. He was just used as a stooge. Now you have the story that the Secret Service didn't shoot him, but they almost shot him. And people are willing to believe that. People are willing to believe that he was almost shot by the Secret Service and that the Secret Service was gunning for him, and it was only their bumbling and fumbling that didn't pull it off, and maybe Ahmadinejad was smart enough to get out of the way of the bullet. The story is that he was nearly shot by a Secret Service shotgun while he visited the United Nations. As previously reported, Ahmadinejad in Iran had been in the news a lot lately, mostly due to trying to gain a nuclear weapon. Recently, Iran launched a destroyer into the Caspian Sea. He made the mistake of hugging Hugo Chavez's mother, angering many in Islamic Iran. This is after Ahmadinejad claimed that Hugo Chavez would return with Jesus to save the world. Oh, that's heavy. An upcoming book entitled Deep State Inside the Government Secrecy Industry claims that in 2006 there was a report in President George W. Bush's daily intelligence brief that said Ahmadinejad was nearly shot due to his proximity to a shotgun fire during the United Nations General Assembly. These are the paragraphs from the book by Mark Ambinder and D.B. Grady, the claim that Ahmadinejad was nearly shot with a shotgun. A U.S. Secret Service agent in an apparent accident discharged his shotgun as Iranian President Ahmadinejad was loading his motorcade at the Intercontinental Hotel. According to the writer, I closed my eyes, quote, end quote. Everyone just stopped. The Iranians looked at us, and we looked at the Iranians. Oh, this is the agent. The agent began to apologize. Ahmadinejad just turned his head and got into his car.
Well, maybe they were trying to kill him.
See, here's the thing that I'm saying. No, I don't think they were, because if they were trying to kill him, it would be against all the concepts and all of the constructed theories and the bullcrap that most of the conspiracy people would tell you. Well, they would never let anybody know that it was them. So because they weren't successful, people want to say the Secret Service was purposefully trying to kill him. If they were successful, they killed him. The people would then say that the Secret Service indeed tried to kill him. And all of the ways that conspiracy theorists usually think would go right out the window, because usually they say there's somebody way, way, there's a deep background on this one. Isn't that what they say?
Oh, God, yes.
So they would say, no, 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 there's something else going on. Were it just a regular citizen, for instance. So in other words, things in the world of the conspiracy theorists just shift around. I mean, you know, if the Secret Service actually killed Ahmadinejad with a shotgun blast and they said it was an accident, no, it wasn't. You guys meant to do it on the orders of the President of the United States and the CIA. Well, wait a minute. Why would the Secret Service very obviously and in just full view of everybody kill this guy? And, oh, yeah, we want everyone to think we did it.
Well, it was an accident.
Yeah, well, it was an accident. But nobody's going to believe that. They're going to think they wanted to do it on purpose. But why would those guys come right out and do it on purpose? Why wouldn't they hide like everybody tells us they do?
Oh, you're saying that... Oh.
Never mind. Why did I even open my big fat mouth?
Bingo. There you go.
In other stories, the one that we were talking about here, after selling his tech startup for millions of dollars in the 1990s, a man by the name of Graham Hill lived in a mansion in Seattle stocked with expensive furniture, the latest gadgets, and flashy cars in the driveway. Hill still has the money, but now he lives in a sparsely furnished 420-square-foot apartment in New York City, and he couldn't be happier. An advocate of the minimalist lifestyle, Hill showed today's Craig Melvin, which is a newspaper, how less could be more with a tour of his apartment, which features a fold-down bed, a table that extends to seat 12 guests for dinner, and an office space that recedes into the wall. He said, quote, people understand that we have supersized, that it's not really working for us, and maybe there's a better solution, in a segment on the Today Show. Actually, the TV show, I don't know.
The Today Show's on television.
Yeah, I thought it was... I think life is about experiences and about connections and about relationships, and I think you want to maximize your time focused on that and minimize your time focused on acquiring more stuff and dealing with it. His current lifestyle, which he described earlier this month in an op-ed for the New York Times, as well as TED Talk, which is that, I don't know, TED is that new, like, what is that, like Twitter for rich guys or something? Anyway, he's received nearly 2 million views online, and it's a far cry from his MTV Cribs existence in the 1990s. While jet-setting around the world, he realized the things he owned were starting to own him. That process of acquiring lots of stuff relatively quickly and feeling sort of wasteful and not very conscious about the whole thing and realizing at the end of the day, it didn't really make me any happier than my smaller, simpler life. Well.
What?
Something tells me that, look, if you've got a 420-square-foot place, but, oh, yeah, it happens to recede into the wall, and then...
Yeah, it's got all kinds of... stuff a guy couldn't have. What are you talking about? That sounds bitching.
Maybe it is bitching. But you got to have some dough to build a place that's got something receding into the wall and something that's coming out of the wall and something that's, you know. And something tells me that whatever this guy drives probably isn't all that cheap.
Well, you're saying that it's an expensive 420 square feet.
Thank you. That's exactly what I'm saying. An expensive 420 square feet. All right, we'll be back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, and a live video cast each and every night. Check it out. Go on over to our website and enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. The Bobby Dooley Podcast with Jay Moore, Part 2, drops tomorrow. Check it out on iTunes.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I see what I'm holding right there. Jay Leno losing his job despite beating his rivals in the ratings. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first, we've got Stephen Bozell on the line. Steve Bozell from Corona, California, on the recent story that we are also reading about and mentioning and it's in New York. There's legislation, Mr. Bozell, that you have discussed with us off air about gay therapy or a Christian gay therapy being banned in New York State. Chris Christie is not going to necessarily sign the. They don't know yet whether Chris Christie is going to sign this legislation or not, because the jury's out on whether it works.
That's correct.
Now, why are you strongly in favor of this?
I'm in favor of it because I was in favor of it because I felt, well, if there's a way to cure the gay, you know, if there's a way to cure a gay person, then I think if it can be cured, then it must be a disease. I realize now that I'm caught between a rock and a hard place, because if I back legislation, and this is in New Jersey, Mr. Henry, this is not here in California, but nonetheless, it was something that I was vocal about in the local press because I thought it might be helpful. I know that it's controversial to say that there's such a thing as, anti-gay training.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of people, myself included, that don't believe, but I don't, you know, I'm not an authority on these matters. What I do know is the psychiatrists, psychologists who tell us that homosexuality is not a disease and it's not an ailment. It's not a, it's a orientation. I know people, some people don't believe that. Some people think that it's somehow a choice or purely psychological, so therefore one can be cured. Now, let me ask you this. You got involved in this. Why?
Originally, I got involved in it because of a series of lawsuits that I had commenced against the neighbor of mine, Roy Hutchins. I'm very confident in my sexuality. Don't get me wrong, but the lawsuits that I had filed against this neighbor of mine were the result of I guess you could say, mocking. He called me all, you know, these names for a variety of reasons.
Well, one of them had to do with a. And I'm just reading, this is a summary of the lawsuits. One was a zucchini.
Yes, sir, there was a zucchini. It was an oversized zucchini. And I don't really want to get into it. I can tell you, though, that...
But the result of all of these lawsuits was that you were feeling harassed by him.
Yes, sir. Another had to do with the... You know, I don't know how I can talk about it.
Well, I've got the lawsuit summary. Your wife had a bachelorette party, and there were popsicles shaped like a man's phallus, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you wound up by accident taking one of these out and sucking on one while you were mowing the lawn.
That is correct, yeah. And so the neighbor, this man, Mr. Hutchins, through a series of what I call harassments, called me a gay. And I, because of that, I found myself backing legislation that would... establish these gay camps.
Now, if you're backing legislation that establishes gay camps, does that not say that you feel you're gay?
No, it does not. Well, at the time, I didn't feel that it did. I recognize now that Hutchins, I'm in a contentious legal battle with him over this kind of harassment. Hutchins feels that because I have lent my support and I've been vocal, that I am afflicted with it.
Well, you call it an affliction. I got to tell you something. It's a little offensive to people, okay?
I know that, but, I wanted to come out and say that I don't believe in the gay camp. If that's what I got to do to get this guy Hutchins off my back, that's all.
Well, is this harassment on the part of Mr. Hutchins serious to the extent that you need to file lawsuits?
Sir, I would not file a lawsuit if I didn't think so.
Well, I mean, because I'm looking back on these. Now, one of them is, and they all have to do with this man mocking you or laughing at you or otherwise not doing much more than just...
Mr. Henry, hold on for a minute. Not, you know, mocking me and laughing at me. Do you have children? Do you...
Well, I've raised kids, yeah.
Okay. Have you ever had a neighbor, you know, lean over the back fence and go, hey... You know, you're having a, you know, you're sucking on that, you know, a penis, you know, it was like a penisicle, and you know, and it did have, I mean, I can be graphic, it looked just like...
Okay, I know what you were talking about.
Yeah, and he's going, hey, you know, don't let the you-know-whats hit you on the chin, and all that.
Okay, so it's a neighbor making fun of you.
Look,
look, I don't want to argue the merits of the case, sir.
All right, we don't have to, but what I'm saying is, what you call ongoing harassment isn't that you filed lawsuits over, isn't it just a guy giving you a hard time?
Well, okay. Let me ask you this, Mr. Henry. When the Ku Klux Klan attacks a black guy, are they just giving him a hard time?
Sir, hold on for a minute.
No, I think it's a fair analogy.
No, it is not a fair analogy. You're talking about you taking crap from a neighbor over a fence as opposed to violent acts, terrorist acts? No, it's not a fair analogy.
All right, but I mean...
See, what I'm asking you is this. Don't you feel like you've overreacted given the fact that you're suing this guy for harassment that led to you endorsing a very controversial and, in the minds of a great many people, including doctors and scientists, a completely false and useless process called gay therapy, gay conversion therapy? You're backing it just because you want a guy not to think you're gay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And now you don't back it because you realize that he got the opposite message.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay, so this is not a lot of wasted energy.
I don't think it is. I know, and people have told me. They've said, don't you think you're wasting your time backing gay conversion therapy when Hutchins used that to prove, to make fun of you and to prove that you're gay? And
well, when you said that Hutchins used that to prove you're gay, what did he do?
Well, Mr. Henry, he engaged in the same process of harassment.
Yeah, but I mean, can you give me the specific things that he did? What form did this harassment take?
I mean, I can tell you, I couldn't go out to my backyard there to go back to the shed to get a tool without him hanging over the fence and asking me how my gay classes were going. And I mean, is that what you're calling frivolous? Because I can tell you.
Well, what, sir, I got to tell you, I find it frivolous.
Well, okay, then you obviously never had a guy ask you how your gay, how your gay class is going while your kids are listening.
Well, all right, if you're talking about gay things while the kids are listening, maybe he could be a little bit more, a little more tasteful.
Yeah, I mean.
But the kids are right there in the yard with you?
Well, no, but I mean, they're in the house, but you know how kids are. They got their ear up to every door, every closed bathroom door. I had my bathroom doors reinforced.
You had your bathroom door?
Like, I'm talking about kids, Mr. Henry. Surely there's someone there in the studio, Miss Dickman or Mr. Gray or Mr. and Mrs. Gray.
Excuse me, Stephen. It's Ms. Gray. We have Mr. Dickman here.
I'm sorry, but don't... Do you understand?
No, I do not. I do not.
But you see, you got to have it reinforced.
You mean the bathroom?
Yeah.
Because you know as well as I do, kids always have their ears pressed against the door, any closed door. And I'll tell you right now, I don't want anybody with their ear up against the door while I'm in the bathroom.
Well, what are you afraid they're going to hear? You,
Sure, they're going to hear you fart.
Shut up, will you?
I don't want nobody. All I'm saying is that the kids probably got their ears pressed against every locked door in America. Every time there's a door that's locked, a kid is on the other side of it with an upside-down glass trying to find out what's going on.
You really think that, huh?
I know that. That's how I was. And that's how I think kids are.
So because of that, you feel your kids heard Mr. Hutchins ask you how your gay classes were going, and you were embarrassed in front of them.
Yes, sir. So I filed a lawsuit. The other time, with the zucchini, when he was showing the zucchini to my wife and my daughter...
What is with this zucchini?
It was a giant zucchini.
Okay.
And my wife had asked Mr. Hutchins, or asked Roy and his wife Ann, how was the garden going? Because he and his wife had started a garden, a vegetable garden.
Okay.
All right. I mean, what?
Okay, so what?
So he had this giant zucchini, and my wife asks about, what's that? And he brought it over.
Well, it wasn't exactly instituted. In other words, he didn't say, hey, have you seen this zucchini?
Well, he's all, yeah, look at this,
Did your wife ask to see it?
Yeah, but she asked to see it, but he didn't have to show it to her.
Well, sir, if the zucchini is on the ground there, which is zucchini is grown by a root, isn't it laying on the ground?
Okay, see, there you go.
There I go what?
You're saying using a word like root. See, this is what I mean, and this is what Hutchins done. He's this.
I got to tell you. All right, so I shouldn't judge. I'm just reporting on this.
Yeah, you should be more objective, sir.
Well, I don't understand. So the zucchini was oversized, and you thought that that looked like a penis?
It could be taken as one.
It was a zucchini, though.
It was a... All I'm saying to you is he was using that as a gay harassment against me.
Was he talking to you?
It doesn't matter. If he's showing your wife a big John Holmes zucchini.
All right, so, all right, that's, what else?
What do you mean, what else?
What else happened? I mean, what else?
Well, like I said, there was just these comments that was made. So I sued, and I got into a political support of gay conversion, and that's when he leaned over the fence that day and said, how are the gay classes coming? And that's when I said, okay, I better reverse my course. And I decided, I gave another interview with the Corona Times, which is our local paper, that I don't back gay conversion, and he leaned over the fence just this morning and said, I hear that you left school.
So,
I want to ask a question. Are you giving these series of interviews with your local town paper, and apparently they are more than willing to give you print time, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you giving these interviews based on the fact that the man is leaning over the fence and making comments?
That's what I was going to ask.
The guy's leaning over the fence and saying stuff to me about being gay.
And you're going off to the local paper and making these public proclamations. This is something only known by you and this guy Hutchins.
You don't get it. Hutchins, man. Hutchins. If I could tell you the power that this guy has.
Well, I want to know. I mean, I think we all do.
If he's got power, you should tell us what it is. We could do something about it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
It's just what?
He bothers me.
But does he have any real influence with anybody other than you?
I don't know, but this is my way of stopping it.
So for all we know, this guy is just giving you crap over the backyard fence, but you're going off to the newspaper and reporting all of this and defending yourself to the people of your city against a guy whose opinions they may not know anything about.
See, I don't understand what you just said.
Well,
never mind. Hold on. We'll be right back. Let's take a break. We've got Stephen Bozell with us. Oh, man.
That guy, yeah, you should just keep him off the air.
You know, so Mr. Bozell is involved in a series of lawsuits, all of this around the gay conversion therapy, which they want to outlaw, by the way, in New Jersey, which my hat's off to them. All power to the legislators there. Chris Christie, though, is holding things up because he's not so sure. He thinks maybe it'd do some good. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Is he gay?
No, he's not gay. He thinks...
The way you're looking at that.
Welcome back, world famous Phil Hendry Show, and philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Get a backstage pass before they all run out.
What? They can't run out.
I'm just kidding. All right. What are you saying, Margaret?
You're looking at that Flipjack commercial.
There's a commercial here for the Flipjack pan. Boy, if you guys want to advertise with me, man, I would love to have you guys advertise with me. The Flipjack pan. And they were showing pancakes and omelets.
Oh yeah, and you the drool.
Yeah, you needed a drool bucket.
I didn't need a drool bucket.
Well, it looked like you were going to start to drool. Seriously.
I got to tell you something. It's been so long since I've had that kind of food. I haven't had pancakes. I haven't had those cheese all that stuff that's so bloody good. I haven't had that in so long. And since October, since I hit my weight, and I even, you know, when we went with the Dooleys over there to Christine Blackburn's place to do her podcast tonight, Christine and I met 7 years ago or so. So she's known me through all these periods of fat. And she even said, you look skinny, man. I said, well, I've been on a diet. She goes, how much weight did you lose? I said, 80, 90 pounds. What did I lose? I lost 80 pounds. And she said, I looked skinny. I said, well, I got to get down, you know, I'm looking to get down to 200.
You're still living that fantasy that you want to get, you want to look like you, you want to get to that Michael Stipe AIDS chic, don't you?
No, I do. What a thing to say.
You want to look like you got AIDS, man.
Yeah.
No, I do not. Michael Stipe AIDS chic. In any event.
Who's Michael Stipe?
He's in R.E.M. He was the lead singer in R.E.M.
I don't know who he is.
Yeah, neither do I.
Fine. In any event, don't keep asking who people are. Just so I was looking at this. I'm like, God, man. And Dan and I were talking. I said, well, look, you can eat anything you want. You can eat anything you want if you're willing to go out and exercise it off. You want to eat 5,000 calories a day? You can do that. But you got to go out and exercise that stuff off. Now, I actually looked up because I had one weekend here recently. I think I told you guys back when I was like binging on chocolate. I don't know what happened to me, but when I finally hit my target weight in October, then I would do, and the holiday season was upon us, so I was doing this chocolate binge thing. I mean, it was insane, man. It was Halloween weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, all through Christmas season. I couldn't get enough of those damn Reese's cups and all that, all the chocolate, not cake, not cupcakes, none of that stuff.
Well, were you eating the little, did you have any Christmas treats at all? Didn't you have the wonderful fruitcake or whatever? What is it, bud?
No, the fruitcake that they have.
I wouldn't eat fruitcake. If I was 800 pounds, I wouldn't eat fruitcake. If I wasn't on a diet, are you nuts?
So you didn't have any of the mission pack that I sent?
You didn't. Did you? Was that you?
Yes.
Margaret, mission pack.
Well, I had an extra one.
Oh, well, thank you. No, I didn't eat any of that. Chocolate, that was the only thing I wanted. So in any event, I looked up in my little exercise guide what it would take, because if I want to burn off some calories, I want to burn off a lot of calories. Do you know how many calories it takes to burn off 1 pound? Or I should say, how many calories it takes to gain a pound? And I think, conversely, how many calories you need to burn off to get rid of a pound or to get rid of 3,000.
Well, say that again.
In other words, if I went out and I exercised, I would need to exercise over a period of time to get rid of 1 pound. I'd have to exercise off 3,000 calories. 3,000 calories. Now, that is running 8 miles an hour for 3 hours. You can do 1,000 calories running 8 miles an hour for one solid hour. Pretty nuts, huh? So, I think that's right, yeah. So, I, for instance, would, the beach here is 1 mile. If I run the beach, I could run that beach back and forth. It would take me an hour to run that beach 1, 2, 3, 4 times.
To run the beach, it would take you 1 hour.
Yeah, because I can usually, I can walk, as I was saying to you guys earlier, I can walk 2 miles, you know, in a half hour, man. I generally, you can walk 15, a mile in 15 minutes. If I was running, and I've only run on the beach, I haven't actually run the neighborhood, you know, and where we live here is a small beach neighborhood, and it's pretty circular. So there is literally a track you can run on here that is about 2 miles long, and I run that 2 times, that's 4 miles. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, get doing all the math.
What I'm trying to say is this. You know, if you use, and a lot of people have asked me, I said, if you use any kind of a calorie exercise, any kind of a site that tells you this online, and there's a million of them, you can find out how many calories or how much time you need to take off so many calories if you go over that target, you know, that I was talking about. I was just talking to my son, Alex, who works for me. And he also is on that diet. Actually, he's just on a diet, and he also lifts weights. He was at 1,600 calories a day. And
1,600?
Yeah, and he said, I couldn't do it, man. He went back to 2,000. 1,600 calories a day. You're getting hungry. You're also getting weak. No good. And he's lifting weights? Forget it.
How much does he weigh?
800 pounds. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No, he's looking great. Alex is solid. He's solid muscle. All right, guys, we'll see you tomorrow night, or tonight, actually, on the West Coast, tomorrow morning on the East Coast, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Remember your backstage pass for all of the things that you need and more. It is a backstage pass and only a backstage pass that can make your dreams come true at philhendryshow.com. Look for our episode 142 of our podcast tomorrow, Bobby Dooley, part two of the Jay Moore drops on Friday.
Phil Hendry.